Welcome to the History Slam podcast from ActiveHistory.ca. Here's your host, Sean Graham.
Thank you, Adam. Welcome to the History Slam, everybody. I am Sean Graham coming at you today nearly live. We are in Gatineau, Quebec, and it is our Canada Day spectacular as we celebrate the 148th birthday for Canada. As in this town, at least, we're gearing up for 2017 and the 150th, and there's signs all over the place. And people are really excited about that. And we're actually talking today to somebody who will be very instrumental in that process, who has been very instrumental in putting together the events today, and also is responsible for looking after some of the national symbols that exist in this country. And it is Joël Giroir, the Director of State Ceremonial and Protocol. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, that is a mouthful of a job title that, honestly, it's hard to tell what you do just based off of the title. It sounds important. It sounds very exciting, the ceremonial part. The protocol, maybe not as exciting. But exactly, like, what is your role here? We should say you're the Department of Heritage. What exactly is your role here?
I can assure you it's a great deal of fun. What I do, one of the important parts of the job, is the promotion and protection of Canadian symbols. Mm-hmm. We're also responsible for things like royal tours, state funerals. Of course, we work on Canada Day as well, so what you'll see on Parliament Hill today. Things of that nature. We also provide federal support to lieutenant governors, which is a little-known part of what we do.
Hmm. For all provinces?
All provinces.
Okay. And could you tell me, as I was walking over here today, there was one of those RCMP things where they block off the streets and there was some sort of motorcade came by. Who was that? Were you involved in that? Because I got held up today.
I wasn't involved in that one. I have had friends complain about being held up by something I've done. But today, that wasn't me.
Okay. But do you know who it was?
No idea.
Okay, okay.
They're pretty common in Ottawa.
They are. They happen a lot. And it's remarkable is how far in advance the RCMP goes to block off the streets. And, I mean, so what if a foreign diplomat sits at a red light? Like, who cares? I mean, I don't care.
They take care of security. They do it really, really well. We work fairly closely with the RCMP on a number of things we do. And I'm sure that if they decided that the street needed to be blocked off, they had a really good reason for it. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for what they do, and they're extremely helpful.
Right, and especially for you, because on Parliament Hill, it's all RCMP people, and for Canada Day, the security then would be the RCMP.
They are an essential part of the Canada Day plan. Yeah. They enable a lot of things. They part of the magic that makes things happen. Mm-hmm. So we're very grateful to the RCMP.
Yeah. And it really is remarkable that, I mean, I don't go to Parliament Hill during Canada Day a lot.
You should.
I should, sure. I went when the Queen was there a few years ago, which was fun. But just the number of people, it's hard to even move around. So that they can keep things relatively secure, and, you know, everyone seems to have a good time. Sure, there's some people who may overindulge in certain things, but that's natural. But for the most part, everyone seems to have a good time. And the police presence, it's there, but it's not intimidating, if that makes any sense.
The RCMP is generally there. They're there to be helpful. And one of the great things they do, you'll notice just before the noon show, they'll have a number of officers out in Red Surge. They answer questions. They take photos with kids and families. You know, they're truly there to be part of the magic, and they're really, really good at what they do.
Yeah. And even just on a daily basis, they're out there, and tourists ask them questions and for directions. And even if they want pictures, I know some of them, most of them will take pictures if they're not directly busy. You know, if they're sort of patrolling, someone says, hey, quick picture, they'll do it. And it makes for, I mean, Parliament Hill is a very open place, and it's nice that you can go and walk around and see things, and they're part of that, and they really contribute to that feeling, and it's nice, I think.
It's a fantastic site. I live not that far away and walk up at least a couple times a week just to wander around. It's a really beautiful place. If people haven't been there, any year is good, but 2017 will be a great year.
Yeah.
Plan ahead. Canada Day is the best day of the year on the Hill, without a doubt.
Right. Sure. I might disagree with you on that, but that's okay. So the Canada Day stuff is a big part of your job, but obviously the can't be all of your job because working towards one day a year, that's not all you do. So what we really wanted to talk about today is some of these national symbols that the Department of Heritage is responsible for preserving some national symbols. So first of all, what types of national symbols are you guys looking after, and how are those sorts of things selected?
We're interested in the official symbols. Things like the flag, the coat of arms, our two national sports, hockey and lacrosse. Mm-hmm. Really those things there that have an official status. Now, how they come about, there are two ways that symbols have come about in terms of our official symbols. There are some that sort of came through usage. So Canada's history, the beaver was exceptionally important to the development of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And that became associated with Canada. So we now have a beaver as an official symbol. But it's through an evolution of things. It takes into account our history. A lot of it takes into account our geography and natural environment.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of evolve to become associated with Canada, and eventually they become official. Others, like the coat of arms or the flag, were created specifically for that purpose as symbols. And for those, there's often virtually always a tie-in with some of those other symbols that have come just to be associated through history with Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But in those cases, like the flag, the maple leaf has been associated with Canada, and people will may debate the time, but at least mm-hmm. since the early 19th century.
Right.
And that flag, you know, the maple leaf showing up on the flag is not by accident, it's quite by design.
Mm-hmm.
It is a symbol that's been associated with Canada since before Canada was a country. So that's how they come into existence. In terms of becoming official, there are a variety of ways to do that. Some of them are legislated, others have been proclaimed by royal proclamation. But essentially, it all ties back to our history, our natural environment, and you know, how we've evolved as a country since mm-hmm. the beginning.
Well, you mentioned the flag, and obviously the flag is a major one. And I was actually at the Canadian Museum of History last night, and outside of their temp exhibit space, where the Greeks is now, or the Greeks exhibit is in the 1867 exhibit, in that hallway just outside there, they had a few panels on the flag and the history of the flag and the flag debate. So obviously that one is official, and there was a lot of discussion around that. I personally have always been a fan of the Pearson pennants. I really like the way it looks. But you know, so the flag that we have now, obviously you would be looking after that. But what about, say, the red ensign? Is that something that you guys would also be concerned about in the use of that? Something that, you know, used to be an official national symbol, maybe not anymore. Is the legacy of that part of what you do?
Absolutely. One of the things we administer, for instance, is a half-masting policy for the Government of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So that determines when the Government of Canada will half-mast its flags. In conjunction with that, we have a historical flag policy. There are occasions when flags from our past can be flown. The red ensign is probably the one that is displayed most often. There are conditions to doing that, and part of that is making sure that people understand why it's being flown, what it is,
mm-hmm.
where it comes from, and what the history is. So we do have a role in that. We do produce, you know, documentation that we send out to Canadians across the country. We have on our website a section on the flags throughout Canada's history, and that would be one of the ones that comes up most often.
Mm-hmm. And when you set these sorts of rules, does that apply just federally, or would provincial governments sort of follow your lead in different protocols?
In terms of half-masting, what our rules apply only to the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Provincial and territorial rules are quite similar, and we collaborate quite closely with, you know, all 13 other governments in terms of making sure that we have sort of a coordinated approach.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's predictable and that people can understand why.
Mm-hmm.
But our rules specifically only apply to us.
Mm. And the other major thing with flags that I think people, or at least in this town, people talk about somewhat frequently is the Peace Tower. I mean, that's a major national symbol. And the flag atop the Peace Tower, there's discussions as to when it would be at half-mast and not. And would I be right in saying that the rules for the Peace Tower are slightly different than elsewhere?
A little bit. Mm. It's fairly similar. The conditions to half-mast the flag on the Peace Tower are a little bit higher than for other flags.
Mm-hmm.
That is the ultimate national symbol, the flag on the Peace Tower.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ultimate an expression of mourning. So it's, there are only certain conditions that would happen under. There are certain days throughout the year, and then there are also for certain individuals. If the sovereign passes, that would be one of them, a former prime minister, a former governor general, a member of the Privy Council, but even then it's limited only to the day of their funeral.
Right.
So it doesn't get half-masted quite as often, and usually not for quite as long, but because it is the ultimate in symbols of mourning.
And it is really noticeable when it happens. Like when you're walking past, like it's, because it's so rare, you know, you take note as just someone who lives in Ottawa. When you see it half-masted, it's usually, you know, before why, because it is so rare that something major has happened.
Absolutely. We do list all half-mastings anywhere in the country on our website. But even with that, when the flag is half-masted on the Peace Tower, we get calls and emails asking why, and people who are curious.
Yeah, and I remember there was a bit of a debate around when Jack Layton died as to whether or not, like, what the rules were and whether or not it should be half-masted then as the sitting leader of the opposition, and what that implied. Eventually, I believe it was half-masted. But it wasn't, I think it was just sort of an unprecedented thing, or there wasn't a set policy yet.
Well, there was a set policy around Mr. Layton. In that case, that policy was applied, but the Prime Minister decided to offer a state funeral to Mr. Layton's family. And when they accepted that offer, once the Prime Minister's offered a state funeral, he also indicated that he wanted all flags across the country half-masted, and that includes the Peace Tower.
Okay. So the flag, obviously a major one, and the Peace Tower too. We'll just finish on the Peace Tower. Is that flag is changed every day?
Virtually, yes.
Yeah, and I believe I've read that there's a major waiting list, that you can get on a waiting list to get a flag that has flown atop the Peace Tower.
Public Works and Government Services Canada does maintain a list to obtain the flag that flew in the Peace Tower. I don't recall how many years, but
but it is measured in years.
It is measured. It's measured in decades.
Yeah.
I can't recall the exact number. They do have that information listed on their website. They have a great deal of information there for everyone.
Yeah.
It's not something I expect. You know, even if I put my name on the waiting list today, I don't think it would happen in my lifetime.
Right. Yeah. And I know too, like for special events, or for a half mass, that family or that flag would be sent then, I believe, to the family, because I was at again at the museum last night. They have a Terry Fox exhibit, and they have the flag that was flown at half mass for Terry Fox from the Peace Tower. And I would imagine that, say, for Jack Layton's funeral, that flag would have been provided to the family.
Depending on the case, keeping in mind that there are days when it flies at half mast for two people or more than two people.
Right.
But there are occasions where the Prime Minister or the Minister of Public Works will offer the flag to a family, depending on the circumstances and what's appropriate at that moment.
And I guess the other major noticeable difference at flags at the Peace Tower, it doesn't happen very often, but when the Queen is here, there's a separate flag.
Absolutely.
And it's only for when she's on the Hill, right?
It's actually used more than that. So
okay.
Members of the royal family, the Queen, the Prince of Wales, the Duke of Cambridge, various others, have Canadian flags. Those flags are used to denote their presence when they're in Canada. So when the Queen is on Parliament Hill, her flag will fly on top of the Peace Tower. When the Governor General is on Parliament Hill. So you'll notice on Canada Day, you have the Canadian flag in the morning, and then at about 12:07, roughly around there, the Governor General will arrive, and the Canadian flag will come down, and his flag will come up, and that's to denote their presence.
Right.
So there is a precedence in terms of flags, which come first, and if you're only going to fly one, which one it should be.
Right.
And of course, the Queen, as our sovereign, her flag takes precedence over all others.
Yep.
And the Governor General's as well would, you know, is just below that. But yes, so the Queen's flag will fly on the Peace Tower when she's on Parliament Hill. It's also on the vehicle that she's traveling in. It's also on top of Rideau Hall when she's there, or various other buildings.
And are those flags for the position, or are they specific to the individual? So when David Johnston came in, did he get his own Governor General's flag, or is it just for the office?
The Governor General's flag is... it undergoes slight modifications from time to time, but that's... it stays virtually the same.
Okay.
Flags for other members of the royal family are created for them. And they indicate that, I'm certainly not an expert in this, but there is an entire story behind the symbolism of each flag to explain who this person is, what their relationship is to the sovereign,
right.
And those sorts of things. So they're quite specific.
You know, the flag is really interesting, and there's these protocols around it. And before we move on to sort of other symbols, one of the things in your title here is protocol. So there are certain rules that surround a flag and how it can be used, where it can be used, and certain things. And I mean, everyone knows that, you know, you shouldn't light a flag on fire, for instance. But are there any other sort of, like if I have a flag in front of my house, like what sort of stuff should I be doing to make sure I'm not breaking any rules or any protocols?
One of the questions we get a lot is that people want, there's a special event and they want to sign the flag as a souvenir.
Uh-huh.
That's not something that should be done.
Okay.
It's,
I may or may not have signed flags in my house.
That's okay. We don't police it. But what you can do in a case like that is you put the flag with a border around it. So you put it on a bigger piece of cloth and you can right. sign the border around. So that's one of the things you shouldn't do. Shouldn't be used as a tablecloth.
Right.
Things of that nature. If you're flying it alone on its own pole, it shouldn't share a pole with anything else.
Mm.
It shouldn't be lower than another flag. So when you have more than one flag flying together, there's an order of precedence based on how many poles are. If, you know, if there are three, it would be in the middle. If there are more than that, it would be on the end.
Mm-hmm.
Things of that nature. So all of that's available on our website. But it's about giving it the respect that it's due, first of all, as a flag itself, so not desecrating it,
mm-hmm.
and also in relation to other flags.
Mm.
So you don't want to have it appear in an inferior position to another flag. It's
right.
our national flag. It's the symbol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you see that when you walk by buildings, schools, or in this town, like Ottawa City Hall, it has the Ottawa flag, but it's I believe they're just on a lower pole, the Ottawa flag.
Right? They can be on the same height.
Okay.
As long as the Canadian flag isn't lower,
right.
it's fine. There doesn't need to be a difference in height.
Hmm.
Now, Ottawa City Hall does fly the Ottawa's flag.
Mm-hmm.
I know that on Flag Day, they replaced all of those with the Canadian flag to
right.
mark the 50th anniversary of our flag this year.
Mm-hmm.
So they do change that up occasionally.
Yeah, and sort of on the plaza there, if you've never been to Ottawa and City Hall, it's a relatively large place. And on the north side, there's sort of a plaza. Now there's the Rink of Dreams there, and they have concerts and stuff. So whenever there's an event, oftentimes the flags around the plaza will be changed for that event. They had a lot of the Truth and Reconciliation stuff there. And I believe there were flags changed from various First Nations across the country there during the Pride Parade. And, for instance, they have the Pride flag up there. So they do change those a lot. But they're always following this protocol with respect to the Canadian flag, which is always somewhere on City Hall.
Absolutely. They do a fantastic job of that. The Chief of Protocol at the City of Ottawa works with us closely as well. And any time I've walked by, certainly the Canadian flag has been in the right place at the right time. So they do a great job of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great deal of awareness in Ottawa and sensitivity to flag protocol. A lot of larger groups, governments, larger corporations do pay a great deal of attention to that.
Mm-hmm. You know, sure, that's Ottawa, right? So, of course, there's going to be maybe a greater awareness of it. And there's a lot of flags in this town, right?
Yes, there are.
There's a lot of flags. We're at Library and Archives Canada, a lot of people who listen to this will have probably been to Library and Archives Canada at some point. Out the back, where you really can't see, even if you're on the other side of the river, you can't really see the area that well. There's still like this cluster of, I think, 8 flags. And it's not really clear why they're there, because nobody can really see them unless you're in the reading room and then you can see them. But it's also kind of annoying because they're really loud. Because it's about the same height as the reading room, and the clanking of the I guess it's a steel thing that connects to the pole
yeah.
just makes noise all day. And it's really strange that it's there, but they have them and it's great and they make noise. But so there are a lot of flags in this town. And do you get complaints sometimes from people around the country that not that there's too many flags, but you know, if they see a flag that is in disrepair? I know my mom, there was a flag at a school closed in our town when I was, I don't know, late middle school, early high school, I think. And they never took the flag down. And then, so over the next year or two, the flag got really ratty, just the wear and tear, and it started to rip. And it really bothered her that the flag was in this state of disrepair. So when people see that, do you get those sorts of emails asking for some sort of enforcement or to take flags down or to get them in the proper place? Is that something that you deal with?
We do get a lot of calls and questions from the public on the proper display of flags, including if they're no longer in a suitable condition to be flown. We only would take action in terms of changing the flag if it's on a federal installation. In that case, we'd arrange for that to be done. But if it's a company, a school, a provincial building, in that case, it's the responsibility of the person flying the flag or the group flying the flag to change it. We're happy to explain what should be done. The best thing, often people don't realize, and you know, we've had people once in a while where we call and say, someone's noted that your flag is in poor repair, and they said, I come into the building every day and hadn't noticed, and they'll change it right away. Often just a friendly phone call to the group or the individual, and they'll notice and take action right away.
Right. Yeah, because it's one of those things, if you're there every day, you might not, it might not stand out. Yeah. Right?
It starts to fade a little bit every day, and you don't necessarily notice it if you're there all the time. Yeah, absolutely. We do get those calls, and we're happy to provide advice. But in the end, if it's not on a federal installation, it's... all we can do is provide advice.
And how do you deal with sort of more remote locations, like, you know, these installations up in the north, for instance, that are very isolated, very remote? They all have flags when you see photos of them. I mean, is there maybe different expectations for those installations with how they deal with some of these issues? Like, let's say their flag rips on a really windy day and they just don't have another one.
So you mean a federal installation?
Yeah.
They'll have another one.
Okay. All right.
We don't manage buildings.
Sure.
Public Works Government Service does. But they do a fantastic job of keeping on top of these things.
Okay.
So, yeah, there'll be another one there.
It's never an issue. Okay. All right. So in addition to the flag, you mentioned there's other national symbols. And you say some of them are legislated. Some of them are just sort of in the popular imagination. But in doing because of that, you know, the government can only do so much in terms of legislating symbols. I mean, to a certain degree, the public has to respond to them. And a lot of this has to do with social memory and the social construction of memory. So, you know, in your experience, what is the balance there between the official symbols as legislated by the federal government and the symbols that the public attaches itself to that might not necessarily be legislated?
Well, quite frankly, the official symbols all come from a place where they were popularly accepted. So the flag, as I mentioned, the maple leaf on it is something that's been associated with Canada for years and years and years. So it's already there in the social consciousness. People already understand the meaning of the symbol. They accept it, they embrace it, they use it. Mm-hmm. And then it goes on to become official, to be legislated as an official symbol. You know, hockey and lacrosse, you wouldn't necessarily need to legislate them in order to recognize them as Canada sports. I think it's sort of one of those things that's self-evident. Because they're self-evident, they were legislated to just elevate them a little bit more and say, this is truly representative of Canada and it's our two sports. Mm-hmm. In those cases, really what it is, it's just a recognition of what's already accepted.
But is there a fear ever that the government taking a role in this maybe takes away from that popular perception of these things? That, you know, these aren't things that have risen up for a variety of reasons, whether it's because the sport is popular or like with the maple syrup or something, right? That people, it tastes good. And, right? And there's, of course, a bigger history to maple syrup than it just tastes good. But,
absolutely.
But these things are organic and come up in a way that is very natural, then that the government's involvement, and I don't mean in a partisan way, just the government's involvement maybe takes away from that how honest they are to people.
We're there to make them accessible. To make our national symbols and our official symbols accessible to people. If they go looking for more information, they want to learn more. They want to have a greater understanding. And that really comes to an understanding of our history, our past, our geography. We're happy to help them do that. And that's really our role, to share the information. And that's what we're there for. So I don't think there's a fear in the government of Canada taking away from the popularity of a symbol that's sort of organically come to be. We're there to essentially help in terms of understanding.
Now, of course, this is a big country, though, and you know the federal government is the federal government, but certainly there are regional symbols as well that, you know, a symbol might not speak to people in the prairies the way it does in Atlantic Canada, and vice versa, and, you know, so there's this swath of regional symbols as well. Is that something that you've noticed, or that the department has noticed, that maybe a certain some symbols that have been legislated as national symbols are responded to in a much more favorable way or stronger way in certain parts of the country?
In terms of our official symbols, they're fairly limited, and those that are legislated are fairly limited. Mm-hmm. So the reaction, if you take the flag, which is certainly the most recognizable, the most popular symbol we have, that is, it gets the same reception across the country. You see it flying when there's a special event, a moment of national celebration. It's there. People want it there. They are happy to see it there. Canadians from across the country, from coast to coast to coast, when they're abroad, and I don't know if you've experienced this feeling, seeing a Canadian flag when you're in a foreign country, sort of a really nice feeling. And I think that feeling applies to Canadians everywhere. There are symbols that are really specific to one region, or to one province, one territory, and those are fantastic. They help to tell the story of a part of our country. It is a huge country. I've had the opportunity to see a lot of it. And so there are absolutely regional symbols. There are symbols for certain groups. I'm a Franco-Ontarian, so the Franco-Ontarian flag has a certain meaning for me that it may not have for someone who isn't a Franco-Ontarian. But that's a fantastic thing. It helps to tell the story of all of us. So yes, there are symbols that are more regional or apply to a certain group, but it helps to identify that area and to make that story more accessible.
And the department would have no role in those symbols. It would only be these federally legislated ones?
Yeah, we only take care of national symbols.
Right.
In terms of provincial or territorial ones, that's for each province and territory to create and to accept and recognize as they see fit. We do have a publication called Symbols of Canada. It's available on our website. And that does go over, we work with provinces and territories to make sure that what they want to see reflected for their part of the country is in there. And it lists, a variety of provincial territorial symbols. So we do get involved in that way, but it's really for them to adopt and for groups to adopt what they think represents them.
Now, in groups adopting things, though, certain, a lot of organizations in this country have the maple leaf in their logos, particularly sports. Lots of sports organizations have the maple leaf, they use the maple leaf. Is that something that they would approach the Department of Heritage about to say, this is what we want to do, we want to use the maple leaf, we know it's from the flag, and we know it's this national symbol, and is that something that you have to do? You have to work with these organizations to ensure that the maple leaf, or whatever other national symbol, is being used in a way that fits whatever the legislation is, or is respectful to the symbol itself.
Different symbols do have different levels of protection under the law. Now, a number of them, the maple leaf can be used by anyone.
If you can draw it.
If you can draw it.
Which is impossible. The maple leaf is impossible to draw. This is... You can't do it. You can't... Anyone who can draw a maple leaf freehand is a professional artist, because otherwise it's the hardest thing in the world to draw.
Well, granted, I don't have a great deal of artistic talent, so I'm with you on that one. But if people want to use it, generally it's out of respect. And the reason they want to use it is to tell part of their story, to show their connection with Canada, because the maple leaf is universally recognized as being a Canadian symbol. So the reason they want to use it is to show that association. They do it in a very respectful way. we are happy to provide advice to give them, you know, different things that they may or may not want to do. But they're free to use it, absolutely, and there's a reason it's such a popular symbol within other symbols and logos. It's because it's to show their association. It tells mm-hmm. part of their story.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about the protection under the law, though. Is that similar to a copyright protection, or is it greater than that, or less than that?
It's actually, if I take the coat of arms, for example, that's mm-hmm. protected under the Trademarks Act.
Okay.
So it's exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you have people on staff here who would help these organizations in designing things? And is that part of what you do? Or is it simply they would come to you and say, here's what we're thinking. Here's our design. What do you think?
We don't provide any design services. Mm. But if they come to us with something and ask, then we're happy to help.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we look out for is we don't want people to adopt a logo or some type of mark that too closely resembles the Government of Canada, and that's handled by the Treasury Board Secretariat. So if it's getting too close, we send them over there and they can get some advice on making sure that they don't match too closely.
Hmm. Like, but, you mean the one that's sort of the rectangle?
Exactly,
that
yeah.
says Canada with the maple leaf on it, that logo?
Yeah, the Canada word mark. Or things of that nature. There are a variety of marks used by the Government of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want any confusion between the two.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually negative for everyone involved, but we're happy to provide advice. People who want to use the flag, especially for commercial purpose in commercials, various advertising, we provide advice on, you know, what should be done, what shouldn't be done. Often, if you don't know, if you've never worked with it before, you're not aware, and there is a risk of offending people, which we haven't encountered anyone yet who's wanted to do that. Everyone who approaches us does so because they want to get it right. So we're happy to help them.
Hmm. So like that Joe Canadian commercial is the one that comes to my mind where they use the flag behind him and his ran, right? So that's the sort of thing that, you know, if something was off bounds, the department might say something.
We'd be happy to answer any questions they have.
Okay.
We don't actively enforce anything.
Right. Because that would be the public. I mean, if someone really misused the flag, the public would respond.
The public would respond quite strongly.
Yeah.
And like seeing tattered flags, we do get letters and phone calls and emails about, you know, I saw this somewhere, is it okay? Or people asking, I'm about to do this, is it okay?
Right.
And we're happy to help. I mean, people who want to use a flag do so because they're proud of their symbol and they want to get it right. So that's why we're there. We're mm-hmm. there to help them.
And is it just, I mean, we talk a lot about symbols, and is it just visual representations and visual symbols, or are there phrases and or even like words, songs that are national in character? Like the national anthem comes to mind as a symbol, even though it's not a visual representation. So are we talking about the whole swath of national, what's another word for symbol? These national symbols? Or is it just visual representation?
No, it does include, for instance, the national anthem. So we do some promotion in the national anthem. It's fairly well known.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, we will provide information to classrooms, things like that, mm-hmm. in terms of what the words are, what the history is, in particular the history. We do get a lot of questions on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. Every national symbol and the national anthem is the result of legislation.
Mm-hmm.
So we do provide the background on that. And that's another example of a symbol that really was used for a very long time,
yeah.
but didn't become official until much later, until right. it was widely adopted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you had the God Save the King and God Save the Queen. It's the national anthem for a long time. And then there's that, what's the other song that I really like? That when they were talking about the national anthem, they were considering it.
Maple Leaf Forever?
The Maple Leaf Forever, yeah. That's a good example. The Maple Leaf Forever, which is a song, not the national anthem, but it was used heavily for national events. Is that, you know, that it's different from the Red Ensign in that it was never never the national anthem, but a lot of people associate it with a national song. So is that something that you would also be looking after?
It doesn't have an official status, so we don't look after it. as you put it. But it is still, we recognize it as a symbol. We still use it at some events. Mm-hmm. It's still fairly widely used. And that's encouraged. We're happy to help people out if they need information on it and things of that nature. No, but it is not an official symbol.
Right.
It's interesting that you compared it to the Red Ensign, because the Red Ensign was never Canada's flag.
Hmm.
It was used. It was authorized for use in a variety of ways, but it was never Canada's official flag. Before our Maple Leaf flag, we had the Royal Union flag.
Right.
And that was the only official flag.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Ensign was so widely used that it was associated with Canada. It's undeniable that it was absolutely a symbol. And there's still an attachment to it today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because you think of, like, Canada in the First World War, these guys were carrying the Red Ensign a lot. And so it just, it does get associated with being an official national symbol. And there are certain symbols today, too, that aren't official, but you see a lot. And they come up. And that's why this element of the social memory of it is really interesting. And, you know, for as much as you can legislate things as national symbols, there are ones that are just going to sort of come up and then fade away with time, too.
Absolutely.
Right? Like these things aren't permanent. Certainly, I mean, the flag is only, whatever, 50, 60 years old.
50 years old this year.
So obviously these things aren't permanent, and you know, in 100 years there might be a different national flag. You don't know. But that being said, has there been any situation where a national symbol has faded to the point where it loses its distinction as a national symbol?
Nothing official. Our official symbols are, as I mentioned, it's a fairly select club.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that will last. The national flag, for example, I'd like to think that in 100 years we'll still be around.
But that'll be twice as long from now than it's already been the national flag.
Well, the reason we've only had one for 50 years is because we didn't have one before.
That's true. Well, we did. It was just somebody else's.
Well, it was ours as well. But we didn't have a distinct one.
Right.
And so that was our first distinct flag. I'm willing to bet it'll be around a very, very long time. Yeah.
I think it will be, too. I think when I die, it'll still be the flag. But I'm not willing to wager that it'll be the flag forever.
Things evolve over time. Even the Royal Union flag, you know, started out in one form and ended up with another. The Red Ensign evolved over the years as provinces were added, for instance. They kept adding to the shield on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point we realized that adding something for every province wasn't really practical. It just settled on one design. And even that one design that was settled on was later modified slightly, the coloring and the leaves and things like that. So things do evolve, for sure. But the ones we have tend to be the really stable ones. Those are what we have as official symbols.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the beaver will always be tied to Canada's history, and we can't change our history.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what happens in the future, it'll always be something that ties us to our past, to our roots, to the very beginnings of this country.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you mentioned the things, this evolution of things, and certainly symbols, they may stay the same, but the style may change, and certain things have changed. The flag is not an example of this, but like, let's say you go to a baseball game, and they play the national anthem, which is a pet peeve of my father, that we play the national anthem too much, especially like a baseball game where there's like one of the players is Canadian, the rest are from the Dominican and Cuba and all over the world and in the United States, but we're playing the Canadian national anthem. Okay, great. And just to his point of view, it just takes up time. And I've slowly evolved to his point of view that we play it too much and it kind of loses its meaning, but they play it. But each person does the song differently, slightly different. The words are the same, but the pace changes and they hit different notes differently. And one of my favorite prop bets for the Super Bowl every year is the over-under on the national anthem. And if the person's going to take however long. That's my favorite one. And it's cool, too, because I was at the Smithsonian in Washington a couple years ago, and they have a thing on the national anthem. And it's only like 8 lines. The American national anthem, and yet somehow it takes people 3.5 minutes to sing it. It's really quite remarkable. But that, so all that being said, you know, as you know, these stylistic things change for something that is a national symbol. You know, are there parameters around how, say, the national anthem should be sung, or how a national symbol should appear. And is it against the protocol for people to put their own personal spin on these national symbols?
It depends on the symbol. Hmm. So if you take the flag, the specifications are very, very specific.
Right.
Exceptionally specific.
Yes.
And we don't deviate from that at all. The national anthem is actually one of the great examples of how something can be adapted to suit needs. Mm-hmm. So the way the legislation is written, the music is there, the words are there, and that's really the important part. How it's arranged. Now, I'm not a musician, but I know a few who will arrange music to suit the particular occasion or purpose, a little bit faster, a little bit slower, things of that nature. And it's actually, the legislation is designed to allow for that.
Mm.
So it is something that's quite flexible, that you're not stuck in something very rigid. The words are what's important.
Right.
And the intent as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I'd say that, you know, it's perfectly fine to sing it at a baseball game.
It just takes up so much time.
But it's time well spent.
And you get these people who put this flair on it with this, like, for no good reason. But so something like, say, in the tradition in Winnipeg now at the Jets games is that the crowd yells True North when they hit that part of the song, which I find really strange just because it's a business group that bought the team and they're using it as part of this national expression for some reason. So something like that doesn't violate any protocol, anything in the legislation.
It doesn't violate anything in the legislation. We probably wouldn't sing it that way at an event.
Right.
But you know what? It comes down to people are singing it to express their pride in our country.
Yeah.
And really, that's the important part. Mm-hmm. How you express that pride, usually not of a big concern for us.
Sure.
What matters is that they recognize these symbols, they use them,
mm-hmm.
they're expressing themselves in a way that, you know, their appreciation for our country.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, to us, that's what's important.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're co-opted for other purposes as well. The example that comes to mind with the national anthem is Rick Mercer, when he did his Talking to American show, rewrote the lyrics and had people in the United States sing nonsense lyrics to the tune of O Canada for a very effective comedic purpose. But that being said, it is co-opting a national symbol in a way that, you know, if the words are in the legislation, the words that he had clearly would not have been in the legislation. And you don't have to talk about that specific example. But, you know, are there cases where people are, you know, using these national symbols for, say, a parody purpose that, you know, could be seen as going against how maybe they should be used?
In some cases, people will. I'm not aware of a great deal of them. One of the fundamental values in our country is the freedom of expression.
Mm-hmm.
And if people choose to express themselves in that way, that's, you know, it's their right to express themselves. Mm-hmm. And certainly we can't criticize that. If you change the words, you're no longer singing the national anthem. You're singing something else. So
it's an important
distinction to make.
Yeah.
You know, we do get people who will have a maple leaf sort of in whatever arrangement, they'll come to us and say, well, is this okay to use the flag this way? And we mm-hmm. tell them, it's okay to use the maple leaf that way, but that's not a flag. That's not our flag.
Mm-hmm.
So when you change something enough, it's no longer the same thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, but certainly in this conversation, I will point out that, you know, yes, national symbols and, you know, this idea that, yes, everybody can attach themselves to them, but certainly there is a history in this country. We have marginalized groups, people that have been treated not well, and, you know, maybe their response to certain national symbols would not be the same as other people. And it's part of a recognition that everyone's going to have a very personal response to national symbols. And, you know, some may be negative, depending on their history. And, you know, this country isn't immune from bad things. And the Truth and Reconciliation Commission is, as an example, the treatment of Japanese Canadians in the Second World War. Right? So these things, these groups may have a different response to national symbols. And that's just something that we should point out. If it seems as though I am being overly celebratory of them, it's certainly not to give the impression that there's a universality to the reaction to these symbols. So we'll just point that out as something that exists in this country. But for you, the department's role and your role in this is to make sure that the symbols that have been legislated as national symbols are, you know, sort of treated in a respectful way, and that they're not misused.
Absolutely, and that they're recognized, that they're understood as well. Understanding is a very important part of it. It really ties people to our history and to our country. Mm-hmm. So having that understanding and knowing how to use them, when to use them, that's what we're here for, really. Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly possible to get into a partisan debate over these things, too, but we're not going to do that because that doesn't interest me personally. Because honestly, I mean, people are going to use things the way that they're going to use them. And, you know, whether it be this government or the past government or whatever the next government is, I mean, you know, there's a history all over the world of people using symbols for their own purposes. And that's something that happens. But, you know, for the Department of Heritage and for the people who work at the Department of Heritage, there's these rules or these protocols that exist, these national symbols. And really your interest is simply in, I would assuming that people have access to them, and ensuring that, you know, they are representative of the nation's history.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So just the last question then, you know, because it is Canada Day, do you have, now this is you, human being walking around, not you, director of state, a ceremonial and protocol, a personal favorite symbol, like something that for you personally, when you see it or hear it or hear the words, that really sticks to you, that's something that you really like?
I'll probably have to go with the flag.
Yeah.
Which may seem like a boring answer, but but I don't think it is. It's the most recognizable symbol we have. It, some of the greatest memories I have from, you know, working this job for a number of years. So Canada Day in 2010 that you mentioned at the opening when the Queen was here, or the 2011 tour with the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge where I was with them traveling across the country, you see the attachment that Canadians have to their flag. Mm-hmm. That they have thousands and thousands and thousands of these little paper hand flags waving at an event, and it's a pretty amazing sight to see. So I like it. I prefer the design of this flag to over the Pearson pennant. I'm sorry. But yeah, absolutely. I think it's a fantastic symbol. We have some really, really neat symbols. And when we take the time to understand them, they really open up our history for us. Mm-hmm. So there are some really good ones. The flag is my favorite. Mm. I'll go with that one.
All right. And so you mentioned throughout the our discussion here that you're open to the people sending emails for questions, and they have stuff on the website. Just if you want to direct people to those, to the site and to where they could get information.
The Canadian Heritage website will have a section on symbols. So follow through there. All of our contact information is there. There is a ton of information that people may find useful or interesting, and certainly encourage them to be there. Also encourage them, if they're listening to this early enough on Canada Day, to get out to Parliament Hill, and if you're in Ottawa, even you, Sean. I expect to see you there this year.
Maybe. Look at my skin tone. I can't stand in the sun for 7 hours. I can't just do that.
Wear sunscreen.
Okay. Actually, my normal routine, now I haven't been in Ottawa for Canada Day too often, but my normal routine has been to go to the National Arts Centre during the day and then wander maybe to Parliament Hill for the nighttime show, but leaving that a little early because I find that the best fireworks spot is behind the Supreme Court. So if I'm going to watch the fireworks, that's where I like to go. I don't know. Obviously, you have a vested interest in getting people to the hill, but it's hard to see the fireworks from the hill.
You do get a view. Uh-huh. I'm working at that point, so I don't really notice the fireworks. But there are a number of great spots. We do have a great show this year, the evening show, as well as the noon show. A lot of the same artists, some different ones. Mm-hmm. So come out for noon,
yep.
Even just a little bit before, because it starts to get crowded around noon.
Right.
Come out a little bit before. It's an hour and a half. You'll enjoy it.
Yep.
You'll have a lot of fun.
Yes. And it's an annual event. So even if you're not in Ottawa this year, 2016, and like you say, 2017, you know, make your plans early for that one.
there are celebrations across the country as well, mm-hmm. and people should attend those and wave your flags and pull out your other Canadian symbols.
Yes. And have a good time.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful day, my favorite day of the year.
Yep. It's just too bad that it's a Wednesday. Because it's hard to like make it into a long weekend. You just plump right on a Wednesday this year. But hey, you know, that happens.
I've worked the last 8 or 9 Canada Days. Yeah. So the concept of a long weekend on Canada Days is a little bit foreign to me.
Right. But, you know, I'm sure you get it as a Lou Day or something else. It's made up somehow, I'm sure.
The excitement of the day, quite frankly, makes up for coming in. It's, you know, there's no more fun place than mm-hmm. being on Parliament Hill on that day. Mm-hmm. So
even if you are running around working.
Yes. Yeah. Even if I wasn't working, I'd still be there volunteering. So mm-hmm. it's the best place to be.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you doing this. And that's Joël Giroir. The Director of State Ceremonial and Protocol at the Department of Heritage. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
If you have any questions or comments for the podcast, it's historyslam@gmail.com. Twitter is @DrShawneeFever. And if you're out and you see Enrico Palazzo, please say hi for me.
Thanks for listening to the History Slam podcast. Be sure to check out Active History for more features, articles, and be sure to subscribe on iTunes.